being that it's your first visit in Buffalo, your hosts, I'm sure, would be very excited to show you some of the old neighborhoods where people of Polish descent emigrated to Buffalo and Western New York. What have you seen so far?
So far, frankly, I've been meeting people most of the time. I have not had much time to sightsee, apart from taking some time off on Monday and actually going all the way to see the Niagara Falls with my wife, who's also with me. So we did some nature sightseeing, but not that much. We went up to the city hall, right, to see the observation deck, to see the city. So that's kind of the extent of it so far.
Now you'll be appearing at the Buffalo History Museum.
Yeah, exactly. Later on, yeah.
And you'll be there for a program on Thaddeus Kosciuszko. A lot of people they are familiar with Casimir Pulaski. They may not know as much about Kosciuszko. Among his legacies is the foundation of what is now known as West Point.
A lot of Poles don't know that Kosciuszko actually was an engineer, not only an insurrection fighter against Russia in Poland, and then of course in the war of Revolutionary War of Independence in the U.S. Actually, he fortified West Point. My first time I went to West Point in 1997 for a student conference, and it was the first time I learned this. I met a Polish cadet. We had an exchange program with the Ministry of Defense, an exchange program, I guess. They sent Polish students who were in the military, I don't know, to West Point. So he showed me around. So there's actually many ways. The Poles are not as aware of a lot of things that are Poland-oriented in America. So it's there's a lot of work to be done on both sides.
Kosciuszko was also a pioneer in civil rights. He wished for Jefferson to release slaves.
Free his slaves and not only free the slaves, but also he said, look, all my possessions and all my assets should go to those freed slaves, which is a very progressive idea at the time. And as far as I know, it never happened. Kosciuszko was known for his very progressive, ideas and his thinking, and he was also he also composed. You know, he composed a few pieces for the piano. He, as I said, he was an engineer. He was kind of a polymath. He was one of those people that are not born every day. He was also very much for the reform of the Polish state. He granted nobility to some of the peasants that he enrolled in his insurrection army against the Russians. He was very much a Democrat in his kind of, you know, not speaking politics, but Democrat in a sense, you know, enlarging the sphere of liberty. And Jefferson called him the purest son of liberty that I've never known.
You spoke just a moment ago about some of the other influence that Poland has left here in the United States in our society. What else did the Poles leave that most Americans may not realize?
You know what? There's a lot of... Right now, I'm preparing a program for next year's 100th anniversary of Polish independence, of regaining of Poland's independence, because Poland was independent and lost and then came back again. Is how many Polish Americans lived in America, obviously, and what kind of contributions they made. I mean, everybody who's Polish knows about Kosciuszko and Pulaski, but you know, there are people like a gentleman named Koprowski who invented polio vaccine. There's a gentleman. There are others. There's Modrzewski, who was the son of Helena Modrzewska, a famous Hollywood actress in the late 19th century, who was an engineer who engineered a lot of buildings in America. There is people of Jewish extraction. Max Factor was a Polish Jew. The mayor, the Goldwyn-Mayer brothers. There's a lot in science. You know, Wozniak, a partner with
Steve Jobs.
With Steve Jobs of a Polish extraction. Jack Tramiel, father of Commodore computers, has Polish roots. Talking today, I mean, Susan Wojcicki is a Polish entrepreneur, CEO of YouTube, and many others, not to mention artists. And you know, so I'm preparing sector by sector type of events which will feature Polish Americans that already passed away, but also some living and also some people who can, Americans and others who can speak about those people, those Polish Americans' influences on their work. So there was a famous Polish mathematician and logician, actually a logician named Alfred Tarski, who taught at UCLA, if I remember, I think it was UCLA or Berkeley. He taught semantics. He was one of the most amazing logicians of the 20th century. And he is the father of computer programming. I mean, without his without semantics of Tarski, you know, we wouldn't have advanced programming. And I learned that from a friend from India who's now a researcher at Microsoft. He said, "Look, I discovered Poland through Tarski, and everything I do in programming is Tarski. It's all semantics." So there's a lot wherever you look, and sometimes you need to really discover it, go deeper, dig deeper. I myself didn't know a lot about those people before I looked into it.
Now, the United States has enjoyed a warm relationship with Poland. President Trump appeared in Poland earlier this year. But one of the lingering issues remains waiving visas. Are Poles more confident that the U.S. is closer to granting visa waivers for Polish travelers?
I know this is there's a Polish caucus in the Congress, and I was recently assisting my ambassador in one of the events in Congress, and a representative from Ohio, Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, was part of the Polish caucus. Was actually saying that there is a new initiative that supposedly is pushing this issue. Now, I wholeheartedly believe that it really should happen. There should be a singular push for Poland, not because, well, of course, I'm tooting my own horn, but you know, the fact that Poland has been such a strategic ally and we fought with the Americans armed next to arm in Afghanistan and Iraq. In many other places of the world, such brotherhship, and you know, help each other in so many ways, and with such history and legacy. Now American troops are in Poland, and Poland has always been this bulwark in against kind of a Russian influence in Europe, or Soviet influence in Europe. You know, it should be natural that Americans would allow Poles to come in on a normal tourist basis. And you know, it's not only a congressional issue, it's also an administrative issue. The State Department obviously has regulations and issues regulations on how consuls should carry out those interviews. And I think under no circumstances should there be profiling, should there be any bias against Poles who are applying for visas to the States. And I think a lot can be done also administratively so that those interviews are fair and properly done, so that you know we don't pass the threshold that's required. That's you know that doesn't allow us to come in.
Now, some other issues going on right now in the world. There's immigration. There are refugees. Now, here in the United States, we welcome refugees, but they've already been through a vetting process that has happened overseas. In Central Europe, there's the dilemma. You want to help people flee from the violence of their war-torn homelands. Poles themselves once flee to what is now Iran and parts of the Middle East. But there's also the question of security and some fear that you know refugees are bringing with them trouble. How has Poland been able to kind of work out that dilemma? You want to help people, but at the same time protect yourselves. Where is Poland right now in terms of their policy?
Sure. The answer is very simple. We would welcome anybody who is documented and requires asylum. We are signatories to the Geneva Convention on the Refugees. Now, what happened in Europe a few years back was by the invitation of one of the member states, there was a mass influx of mostly what seemed to be economic migrants from the war-torn areas to Germany. But they had to cross a lot of borders. There was very little respect for the rule of law on the Schengen border areas. They just kind of came in en masse, and whatever the authorities were doing in those exterior border areas of the Schengen area, trying to check if those people were coming in with all the required documents and documentation. People actually did test those people. A lot of them turned out to have multiple passports, multiple IDs. Some of them were not from Syria. So I think there has to be a rule of law. There has to be some vetting, in a sense, that you know those people have to present their case. They cannot en masse in tens of thousands suddenly enter in at the invitation of one member state that sits in the middle of Europe. There has to be agreement. Now, right now there's an issue with those people who entered. They never wanted to enter Poland because for them Poland is still too too poor and its welfare programs not generous enough. So when they enter Poland, they obviously go on to Germany, to Sweden, and those countries where they can live better lives, they think. So Poland, first of all, has never been a destination for those migrants, and why should we force them to stay? Now there's a debate in the European Union whether there should be a reallocation of those who have already entered. Well, Poland and my minister always says there shouldn't be a forced reallocation. If those people don't want to go to Poland, they obviously they don't. They want to stay where they are. We shouldn't be a party to a forced reallocation schemes. We ourselves as Poles live through forced reallocations and migrations, and we are not in that business. Now we also but those who want to come to Poland and want to stay in Poland, like the Ukrainians or Belarusians, we welcome them. Last year, we issued over 700,000 work visas for Ukrainians. Obviously, these are economic migrants who want to work. But among them, there was a significant percentage of those who ran away from the areas that were attacked by Russia. And we welcome them. So we do help those who actually want to come to Poland, have a justified reason to do so. And there is no problems. Obviously, the security concern is there. The reason why we didn't allow for this forced reallocation and the mass influx in the first place is that, look at what's happening in Western Europe right now. I mean, without proper vetting, you let in certain elements that could turn out to be dangerous. And this is not a racist bias or anything of that sort. It's just pure prerogative of a sovereign state to behave this way.
Now, you have worked in Lebanon and dealt directly with Syrian refugees, so you do have that perspective. Tell me about what it was like to encounter them on the field in Lebanon.
You know what? The first thing that there were 1.5 million of those refugees in Lebanon. They're still there. It's a quarter of the country of Lebanon. Lebanon's country of not even, it's 4.5 million people. And a lot of those people from Syria, you know, they share their language, first of all. They've been there before. In fact, they could travel and work freely in certain sectors in Lebanon, like construction and agriculture. They just basically brought in their families. They feel very much at home, in a sense. The countries are very close culturally. So the problems are in Lebanon had more to do with infrastructure, with providing them with services, because they obviously overburdened the existing infrastructure and services of the state. But not so much a security consideration in that particular context. And you know what? When you talk to them, when you ask them, you know, they really want to go back home. Of course, some of them would love to have, you know, a great life in a kind of wealthy country of the West. And, you know, everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people, including some of the Poles, you know, dream of immigration and making a great living in the States or anywhere else. But, you know, these are normal ambitions that people have. But most of them want to stay and go back to Syria, to where their villages are. And this is what Poland is doing too. We're actually enhancing our support where it's needed most, which is where the refugees are, where they are staying. The closer to Syria, the better, because this is the more removed they become, the more difficult for them will be to come back.
Now, speaking of the culture here in the United States, you know, people may have Polish roots or ancestors, but for them, being Polish is, it might be that the kinds of foods they eat, maybe practicing some of the customs around Christmas or Easter, celebrating Dingus the day after Easter. What do you think is the most important thing that people here in America of Polish roots, what's the most important thing or thing that you don't want them to lose?
I don't want them to lose something that I always tell Polish Americans, you should be proud of the fact that you brought the good elements to American culture. Poles are family, tradition, faith-oriented people, by and large. And this is something that America has always been. This is the strength of America, that you have strong churches, strong families, strong cultures, strong faith. It really makes you great. And Poles have that. Poles have that very healthy orientation. So I always tell them, preserve that. Preserve that attachment to traditional values, to hard work, to family and church. And you'll be benefiting America and you'll be benefiting your community. So that's something that should never lose. Another thing, obviously, is the language. Now, language is a bit more difficult because, you know, we intermarry, you have all sorts of things of that sort, which is natural. Now, Polish language is becoming more and more popular, should become popular among Polish Americans who may have lost it or whose children maybe may not be keen on learning it because American businesses are coming to Poland. It becomes a practical investment. You know, everybody knows English. Everybody knows, I don't know, maybe some Spanish. But Poland is a 40 million country. It's the sixth largest economy in Europe, 23rd largest economy in the world. It's now moved up in the rankings to a developed country by the World Bank. It's not anymore an emerging economy. We have a lot of companies, especially in the military sector, coming to Poland because we have a multi-billion dollar modernization program and they're investing in Poland. They're probably looking for Americans who can speak Polish and work there and work for those American companies. What an amazing opportunity for Polish Americans to get involved with their roots while working for an American firm in Poland and things of that sort. So, language, very much important, and I think they should be proud of it. We're not a small country. It's a country that you know, you learn the language. It may seem exotic, but it's useful.
Their information technology savvy is actually well known within Europe, but perhaps very underrated as viewed by the United States.
That is true. I mean, look, there's a lot of work to be done by people like me, and that's precisely why I'm here. I mean, the level of understanding of Poland is low. The level of savviness about what Poles are good at is relatively low unless there are people in business who know about this. I mean, we routinely win, young people from technological universities in Poland routinely win world competitions when it comes to programming and computer science. Polish students have designed parts that were used, they're designed, you know, mechanisms that made that were used on the Mars. You know, I'm talking about those the ones, the wheeled mechanisms.
Well, right? The probes, yeah, the probes, the rovers.
The rovers and things like that. I mean, even before that, I mean, a Polish person, forget his name, in the 60s already invented engineered the most important part of the Patriot missile. Not many people know about that. We are extremely savvy when it comes to the kind of IT and software technology and computer technology and precise engineering. And we have a cost advantage. And those who know it, I know, already exploit this advantage. And they use Polish scientists and software engineers. A lot of them come here. They join PhD programs. We would love them to come back to Poland at some point and start their businesses. That's why we promote startups in Poland also. A lot of them move to the States. They get incubated here, but we also have our own incubators right now and attract those people so that there's no brain drain. But that's one of our advantages. But you know, we have great medical science, and our doctors are very much in demand. At least in Western Europe, I know that they're just we have fewer and fewer doctors, frankly, because the Brits, the Norwegians are importing them. In the United States, a lot of Polish Americans, but also some Americans, go to study medicine in Poland because there are some English language programs at medical schools in Poznan, in Kraków, in Warsaw that give them excellent medical education. They come back to the States. They don't even need to be recertified. They just need to be admitted to practicing medicine, and they're American doctors. And they do really well. So, we have a very well-educated workforce that presents a lot of advantages for investors and anybody else.